So again, hello everyone. My name is Jordan Sanchez. I'm lead analyst of the Canadian telecom sector here at Goldman Sachs. In this session, we have George Cope, CEO of BCE. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So maybe just to start, I thought it would be helpful to maybe go over some of your key priorities for 2017 and some of the progress you've made maybe through 2Q.
Yeah, well, I think the integration of MTS is obviously a clear focus for us this year, and that's we can talk about that a little bit, but it's on track. For sure, generating the cash flow we expected and positions us very well going into 2018 from a free cash flow perspective. The execution of our fiber build continues. You know, I think last quarter we talked about us being another 100,000 ahead of where we thought we'd be, end up somewhere, 3.4. Went up, looking at my investment, make sure I got the right number, million fiber coverage, and obviously a lot of the focus being around the Toronto build, and that majority of that will be completed at the end of this year, and we'll be in the market. We're in the market now, but we can aggressively approach the marketplace with more footprint as we go into early next year. So I think that's obviously a key strategy for us, or key strategic priority for this year. And then seeing the successful rollout of some of our new TV products, like the Alt TV product we just launched in May, which is really a TV product with all the content that you would get in a linear environment, but in a streaming environment within our TV footprint, so it meets all the regulatory requirements, but it's a non-set-top box delivered streaming TV service that's significantly lower than our traditional linear TV because we don't have to ship there's no set-top box, there's no truck roll required, and so we're passing that savings on, really focused on the cord cut market with that product, taking some of the features from IPTV there. So those are probably some of the key priorities for the company.
Gotcha, and I'm sure we'll touch on much of those as we kind of talk through this. So let's start with the MTS transaction.
Sure.
You closed the deal, $3.9 billion in April, and you subsequently sold some of that off to TELUS. And integration has been a core competency for your business. So maybe you can provide an update on that overall kind of integration process. Any surprises? Where are you at this stage relative to Bell Alliance, which was the last pretty large integration you had? Maybe we can start there.
Yeah, well, the integration, you know, one of the things we learned from the Bell Line integration is you get the benefit of the local telephone company from the Alliant name and, if you will, the halo of the Bell name and the scale that we bring to the table. So we've done the same in Manitoba with the company being Bell MTS. MTS has a very strong or had a very strong market share. We still do. But quite frankly, the fixed asset pool, telecom asset pool, on the wireline side needs more investment than the Bell Alliant did, not as far along in some of its expansion. So we'll be doing that, but that was all in the numbers when we acquired it. We talked about the capital program over 5 years there. From an operating perspective, we'll probably see a 10% expansion in the EBITDA margin of the business in the first 12 months of ownership through the cost synergies that we've been able to, we clearly now see them, have frankly been executing on them, which is pretty significant on an asset base of that size, to see the margin expansion of 10% in the first 12 months. And that gives us the free cash flow coverage that we wanted on it. Also helps pay for what was clearly a fully priced transaction. Put us as the number one wireless provider in that marketplace and let us integrate our Bell subscribers that were there, and then they migrate onto the MTS network, so that helps us as well. So off to a good start, I would say, and all the numbers seem to be where we wanted them to be. And if anything, the synergies are just slightly ahead, which has probably been more our track record anyway on these transactions.
Great. So it looks like you're proceeding well on the integration. Maybe we could talk through some of the kind of revenue synergy opportunities. You're going to be, you know, you do have massive scale across Canada. What sort of benefits do you see there? And then, like as you suggested, you are investing in the network there and all of those types of things. What sort of revenue opportunities do you see kind of coming through this deal?
Yeah, well, that's a trickier question because I think MTS had a very strong market share position. So when we looked at the asset, it was about maintaining the market share and looking, though, at the cost that we wouldn't have to duplicate. I mean, simple things like all the MTS wireless subscribers roamed on Rogers on a national basis, and within, 30 days we switched them so they all roam on Bell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't change your revenue profile, but it's 100% margin swing on the roaming cost going from off of Rogers onto Bell. You know, those are are the pieces of the puzzle that I think are driving the opportunity. The opportunity for revenue growth will come from us moving our IPTV platform into that province. Mm-hmm. You know, the MTS has TV services that are fine from a competitive standpoint, but not at the level of what our IPTV service is. So that's, you know, that will roll out over the coming months, over, and you know, that's probably something in the next year's, not into this year's time frame. And then ultimately overlaying some of their core markets with fiber right to the prem instead of FTTN to maintain the market share there and make sure that we don't give any up. And then obviously there's revenue growth because of increased usage. Those would be some of the thoughts around that asset.
One last thing to touch on here. I mean, so we touched on the almost near national wireline footprint. Kind of speaks to an opportunity to bundle a lot more than some of your peers. And, you know, here in the U.S., you're seeing a lot more of a bundling strategy implemented by companies like AT&T and things like that. And so what's the appetite for bundling in Canada, and do you see that as an opportunity near-term? And then long-term, maybe you could just talk about the opportunity to kind of integrate a lot of the assets you've kind of commingled here in terms of the near-nationwide wireline footprint. You've got a wireless asset nationwide. You've got a media business. What are some of the broader kind of integration opportunities you have from this perspective?
Yeah, that's a very good strategic question. I'll be a little careful how I answer that because okay. I'm in a public audience. But, you know, first of all, on the bundling side in Canada, a lot of the bundling, we see is family plans of wireless itself right across the board. But there's no doubt, you know, the coming together with wireless and the other products in the household are an acceleration in the marketplace. It is one of the most unique parts now of our footprint. If you look at it, 70% of the country is now covered by our wireline footprint. So when you think about fiber, and we're building fiber out to literally every home and business over the next 5 to 6 years, how much of that do you amortize up against the wireless business? I mean, really, wireless in one sense is getting a free ride on the back of our wireline capital program. But when every neighborhood's done in Toronto, if we end up wanting to use those small, you know, the telephone poles for 5G towers, the fiber will already be there. So clearly, we do that across our footprint. That's a, I think, a significant leg up for us in terms of our cost structure going forward. And then on the integration piece, yes, you're absolutely correct. I mean, if the market moves ultimately to, you know, complete bundles between wireless and wireline and broadband, the depth of our footprint is second to none, and almost in most markets in the world. And we think that's been part of our strategy, and we think ultimately that lends, you know, quite a attractive position for us in the market. And for Bell Media, frankly, if we look at the province of Manitoba, we own the satellite business there. We always have as Bell, and now we're going to roll out a better TV product. That just brings more subscribers through to Bell Media and other subscriptions. So there's, you know, it all fits together in terms of what we're trying to do with our vertical approach to the marketplace.
Makes sense. Okay, let's move over to fiber. It's been a hot topic. I mean, there's a lot of ongoing kind of investments across North America, both in Canada and in the U.S. So maybe we can start with a quick kind of fiber overview. What's the rationale? And you are seeing a step up across the board in fiber investments. Why do you think the industry broadly is thinking this is the right time versus in years past?
Yeah, well, you know, if you look at us, we started it almost 4 or 5 years ago now because we're, you know, 40% of what we're going to cover with fiber will be done by the end of this year. And in the end, we're going to cover about approximately 9 million of our 12 million footprint, we think, with fiber. Our growth plan is somewhere, hopefully we can get 700,000 to 800,000 additional premises done every year over, you know, each of the next few years. Success-driven performance might accelerate that a little bit, and also the pace of getting it done is tough. We're the largest broadband provider in the country with, you know, 3.8 million Internet subscribers, but we're still only at 40% market share in our markets, maybe 38 in some, 40 in others. So as we roll out fiber, you would think logically over time, if fiber is in every one of these facilities, we should be able to grow our market share closer to 50% of the market over time in the competitive structure we have. So as someone moves, you would like to think with fiber we would get 1 out of 2 of those choices, where we've been in historically getting 4 out of 10 of those choices against our cable operator. So we're the largest provider, but not the largest in any of the single markets we're in. Mm-hmm. We think that's the upside. You know, the product, obviously, once you've rolled fiber out, we can take it from 5 gigs to 10 gig services pretty simply over the coming few years. It will take speed off the table for us as an issue for any customer. And it will be vastly the superior broadband experience and sets us up. You know, we're at 12 devices now in the home on average. You know, there's no doubt that's going to grow 25 to 30, because every element in the home is going to ultimately be plugged into the internet, and we see the usage growing on a constant basis. So it's, we think it sets it up really well, and not just on the consumer side, but as we're doing this, we're doing all of the enterprise and small business market as we go through that as well.
Maybe we could just touch on the whole capital requirement process. I mean,
sure.
You are going to be spending here. How do you get comfortable with target returns? I know, as you alluded to earlier, you have been doing this for a while, so you do have some established markets. Maybe we could talk through kind of what you're seeing in some of those markets that make you confident about the returns.
Yeah, I mean, our most mature fiber markets were, a number of them were over 50% market share. So we see the target of getting to the 50 possible. Operating costs reduce because, you know, as great as copper has been for over 100 years, it doesn't handle wet weather well and a lot of other things we do where the fiber will. So we know the maintenance will be less and our operating costs will be better. We see that, you know, already in terms of what we're doing there. Sorry, what was the other part of the
question? Oh, and the CapEx requirement.
Yeah, and on the CapEx. So, you know, from a capital perspective, we've been very transparent for a number of years. You know, the weighted capital intensity for BCE has been between 17 and 18% for the last number of years. You can pretty much count on that going forward. Take our media business at about 3 to 4. Take our wireless business at around 10. Take wireline as the X factor, not to be greater than 18% in a consolidated basis. So wireline runs between 22 and 24%. Our wireline EBITDA margin is about 41%, which has given us the investment headroom relative to many other carriers around the globe to make this fiber investment, because we can make the fiber investment and generate free cash flow on our wireline business because of what we've been able to do from a cost perspective on our wireline business in terms of having the margins at the number that we have. So I would, people should expect that next year. You know, our capital next year, again, is around $4 billion. You can, and we'll put guidance up, but the math kind of supports that without any sort of major, disclosure. And the fiber bill within that $4 billion is about $1 billion. And then you've got demand capital and wireless and media and all the other things we do. So it's not like it's absorbing every piece of capital that we've got, because demand capital, of course, takes a lot of capital as well.
So you alluded to kind of a timeline, and you're, you're currently working on Toronto, and you've also kind of announced a project, Montreal.
Right.
So maybe we can walk through kind of the timeline for those sorts of projects, when you're expecting to start and or complete them, and then, with Toronto kind of in progress, kind of what you're seeing in those markets, and you know, how similar or dissimilar is that to kind of what you saw in some of your earlier markets?
Well, all of our markets, mass marketing can't really begin until you get over 60% mm-hmm. of the households covered. And so you'll see us in the Toronto market in early 18, so that will tell people, okay, we're obviously through that number from a majority of coverage. We just announced Montreal. Montreal is a nice build for us because it's 90% aerial. And so it'll be a much lower cost, and it should be, over time, according to our capital allocations, should be a faster build than Toronto as well, subject to our capital intensity and what we're able to afford to do on an execution perspective. Then, you know, some of the obvious markets become Ottawa and then the 905 area, which, for those that don't know, is kind of the ring around Toronto, which is a significant area for us to do as well. That's a more expensive market. That's a lot of buried. And, of course, aerial is the best. Buried is the toughest, the more expensive. But that's really the journey that we're on. And then every new neighborhood, everywhere there's construction, and there is a lot of it right now, of course, that's fiber from the minute we start. So we pick up, about another 100 to 130,000 fiber footprint every year just from new footprint. And that can be anywhere. It doesn't have to. We don't lay copper anywhere anymore in any new areas, for sure.
And one of the things that investors do ask is, clearly one of your peers, smaller in size, is going at a faster pace. And understandably, you guys are doing, a lot in terms of the sheer number of fiber builds you're doing. But maybe you could talk through, the long poles in the tent potentially going faster, given the returns you've seen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming you've got to be talking about TELUS, because that's the other one doing it. We think it's fantastic that TELUS, in their footprint, is doing fiber, because we have a lot of respect for them, and it confirms the strategy of fiber for telcos in Canada to the home is an appropriate strategy. I'm not sure actually who really is ahead. If you really take, you just got to get underneath what percent of what footprint people are talking about. I think we're both accelerating. We both see the opportunity. I don't think we're in a race with TELUS on that one. I think they're doing what they should do. We should do what we should do. Our capital intensity, we've been consistent. the fact that 40% of our fiber build is completed at the end of this year, I think that puts us pretty much on par with that peer. There might be a little bit ahead or behind. I'm not really sure. I have to admit I don't focus there. Focus much more on what our competitors are doing in our own footprint. In terms of accelerating the pace, I mean, we are going full out as hard as we can go and as fast as we can go. These are major builds. I mean, we are laying 88,000, I know I'm in the U.S., but kilometers of fiber in Toronto. Okay? I mean, it is right from ground one going to every single home in the fourth largest city in North America. Right? Yeah. So it is, you know, it's an enormous build in every single business. So we, frankly, if we find a way to do a million instead of 800,000 a year next year within some reasonable capital, we would obviously consider that. But it's taking every resource you've got to stay with it. And if we ramp up too fast and you have to ramp down very quickly, you also have some huge costs you have to take back out of the business. Whereas if you build a steady growth machine to be able to add X number, we think it's a good pace. I mean, the other thing, too, which I think is factual, I mean, everyone's not using 1 gig or 1.5 today. You know, we are really going where the market's going, not where the market really is today, even though we have these services. And the reason we have to do that is we can't be there tomorrow if we don't start now. I mean, that's really the requirement for everyone using 1 gig of service in the home. It would be hard to argue that's what everyone's using today.
Yep, fair enough. Okay, let's switch topics again and move over to kind of the pay TV universe.
Sure.
So, you know, historically you guys have led with a superior TV product pulling through internet. A lot of the Canadian companies are now kind of signing up for X1.
Our competitors, for sure.
Yes. The cable code specifically,
yep.
Right. You know, we're all very familiar with X1 here. How do you, from your perspective, how do you think your IPTV platform stacks up versus X1? And as this kind of gets deployed, how do you expect to kind of maintain your leadership profile there?
Yeah, well, look, we have a lot of respect for Comcast and a lot of respect for their product. I think they're one of the best operators on the globe. So obviously the product will be competitive with what we're doing in the marketplace. Our IPTV product has some really unique features, the catch-up features, the trending features that are on it, the fact that in your home, our technology, every iPad in the house automatically finds our TV service and becomes a television set. The fact you can actually port that on your iPad and go anywhere with it from a mobile perspective with the app. So we're ready to compete with what our cable companies do at some point in 2018. And we've become the largest TV provider through that. And now we've just done some unique, I was just mentioning, we launched this service in May.
Mm-hmm.
It really takes a lot of our IPTV app and moves it into in essence, a streaming service, but again, it's licensed TV service, targeting the cord cutter market. It's $10, $15 less than our traditional TV service. So someone could get sports and other products for around $45 Canadian. No set-top box, no truck roll, targeting that market, and to watch the cannibalization between linear TV and OTT, there's only two streams allowed. So, and our average home has set-top box over two. So we're not targeting the SFU, we're targeting the MDU with this product. We think that product, launched with our fiber product in Toronto, puts us in a great position. We think it's very good for the media companies in Canada, not just Bell Media, Chorus Media and everyone else. We're carrying them, therefore, all their products in a stream service, not just in linear, so they can monetize the eyeballs, et cetera. So, you know, with our HBO relationship, you can buy that service today from us. It's streamed, and you can watch Game of Thrones through a stream service and a subscription-based product. So that, you know, we just started that in May. We think that combined with our IPTV product and our satellite TV product, combined with our move on fiber, positions us well in a pretty competitive marketplace.
So starting May, and understandably still early days, but a few months into it, I mean, how are you seeing the demand for that product? Is it lining up with that strategy? Are you generally
Yeah, no, it actually is. Yeah, it feels good. It feels good. It's off to a reasonably good start. Remember, we're targeting those that don't have TV subscriptions. We also only sell that product because clearly it needs our broadband internet service to have it, so it's a product that comes with Bell Internet.
Mm-hmm.
So we think it's a way to grow our broadband market share for us. So we get a subscription for internet of, you know, $60, and if we get a TV subscription, in this case, of, say, $45,
mm-hmm.
it's a $105 subscription in the home. We pay for the content, but we own a third of the content as Bell Media. that's a pretty strong relationship for us in terms of our vertical integration approach to the marketplace. So it's early days, but if you go out 5 years, you could envision, obviously we all can now envision a lot of the market without set-top box, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is our step to try to begin to be that aggregator. And then if you do, one of the big differences between Canada and the U.S., and if I'm off, keep me on the right side of this, because obviously this market will know that better than I do, but pay TV in Canada subscriptions are generally around 60 dollars Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I think here in the U.S. it's anywhere from 80 to 90
mm-hmm.
U.S. So $60 Canadian is, unfortunately, but in Canada today, $48 U.S. So the idea that Hulu or someone else has a $45 OTT U.S. product is suddenly going to come flying over our border and be so much more competitive actually isn't factual for our TV business. Our TV business has always had a more affordable TV offering than
mm-hmm.
here. Different in some other products that we all, there's always talk between wireless and Canada and the U.S., but interestingly enough, it's been different. And maybe that's because we're more vertically integrated with the internet providers as well, that we've been able to keep those two together. So I think that product positions us well, too, with some of the other global things that are going on.
Fair enough. So just maybe even to continue there, your largest broadband provider, we talked about how you're integrated, largest pay TV provider. But recently you have talked to growing competition from over the top.
Yes.
So I'd like to kind of get your view, given you're kind of involved in all aspects here, on what you see going on with over the top today versus maybe a year ago, and how broadly you think Canada is kind of positioned for over the top.
Netflix has been very successful in Canada. We actually probably helped Netflix be successful because we put Netflix on our set-top box 2 years ago before
mm-hmm.
it happened here. We treat Netflix as a channel in our linear TV world because, frankly, it's great content and should be there, and we shouldn't act as if it's a competitor to our media asset. We have our own over-the-top service called Crave TV, which is Showtime and HBO and other content that we sell direct to the consumer and also is part of our linear TV product
mm-hmm.
portfolio as well. So there's no doubt the consumer's preference. There is a market for OTT services and a market for the traditional linear. But a lot of the OTT is what's the content and what's the price point. So what we're trying to address through ours is all content that's linear will be available in that
mm-hmm.
arena and just make sure that that cost is reasonable, but we still got to make money as we go through on it. There's been a lot of OTT providers, and then it's about which OTT providers are making money. Those are two different conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always trying to do both.
Okay, so sticking with the competitive front on wireline, but moving from OTT over to your cable peers, I guess year-to-date, historically you guys have generally taken share, but some could argue that cable has bounced back a bit more recently with their 1 gig kind of services, and especially as your IPTV product expansion has kind of slowed. Promos have also played a role. So far, how do you look broadly at 3Q so far? How is it different and or similar to kind of what you've seen so far in the year? Are you seeing any interesting promos as it relates to back to school? How would you broadly describe, the competitive environment today?
Well, it's a competitive environment. I also agree with your comments on, some of the market share swings in the first half of the year. And one of the things we've got to be extremely careful of, we're the leader on the internet in the country. We're making a fiber investment. We know we have clearly the superior product rolling out in some of these key markets. So we're not surprised to see our competitor do a little bit of pricing early on when they admit they have a better TV product coming next year, so they might be using price a little
mm-hmm.
earlier, and over time it'll be different. So we're not going to overreact to that. I think people will continue to see our performance. I think you'll see it's consistent, and you'll see results through the second half of this year and next year consistent with the strategy I'm talking about. I have to be careful beyond that, everybody knows.
Right.
So it's probably not much of an answer to your question.
So clearly, you highlighted some strong fiber internet and broadband results within fiber markets.
Yes.
The most recent quarter, but it clearly also kind of implies that results for broadband outside of those fiber markets are not necessarily as strong. You do have this multi-year build to fiber, but, as you're building out, there will be parts of your footprint that don't have fiber. And so what's the strategy in some of those markets to kind of maintain competitiveness?
As fast as we can go is the first strategy,
okay.
Right? The second is obviously making sure we are positioned with complementary products, whether that's with satellite, IPTV, capabilities becoming stronger or wireless, anything we can do, obviously, in those markets. But really, it's about getting this footprint covered to compete. And different carriers in each market's a little different. We compete with Videotron, Cogeco, and Rogers, so and Eastlink, so it depends, and now Shaw as well. So it depends on their relative strength, what we're going to do, and what we do with bundling and what have you. But, you know, I think, you know, as I mentioned, we're at about 40% broadband internet share. We've taken some share over the last few years. Granted, that stabilized over the last few quarters. I think you'll see with the rollout of fiber, investors have to make a call whether or not they think if you have fiber, whether or not you think it's a reasonable assumption you would keep your current share and maybe grow with that type of investment. Our track record of what we did with our wireless business in the last 6 or 7 years, what we did with TV coming into it, becoming by far not the leader to the leader, hopefully we'll get confidence in investors to understand that we probably will know how to broadband grow that share too with a similar, without, you know, causing enormous disruption in the market, because it will be a superior product. It's not about a superior price. It's about a superior product strategy. It's been our wireless strategy. We clearly have a superior wireless network, and as a result, you've seen the superior ARPU performance in the industry by our company. That's really been our approach to the market.
Okay, fair enough. And this will be my last question on wireline. Just touching on the business services aspect of the business, you know, wireline growth has kind of been contained by that side of the business. Maybe you could just provide a brief overview of kind of the economy, where you're seeing some strengths and weaknesses, and broadly kind of your outlook of demand there.
Yeah, well, I think you mentioned the wireline overall business. I mean, the real wireline portfolio challenge is still the fact that 8% of our total revenue of the entire company is wireline voice consumer. And, you know, that's still, that local access business is still declining. So that's the, you know, if you take that out, of course, the growth rate looks really different, but that's a reality. The good news from a math perspective is it's a smaller and smaller piece of our revenue stream, so the growth in broadband helps offset that more. In terms of our business base and the economy obviously reported some very strong numbers in Canada. A little bit of bounce back, of course, from last year. We had the, you know, some of the challenges in Western Canada with prices of oil and some you know, issues there as well in the West. So a little bit of a bounce back, a little more dramatic maybe then because of that, but still very strong. Small market, I mentioned on the call, we're feeling some strength there. Mid-market as well. Enterprise, you know, the enterprise challenge, I think, for every telco is just, certainly for us, we have a strong, strong market share. We feel great about that market share. Top-line growth is a real struggle there. And if you look at most of our top clients, not a lot of job growth, a lot of productivity growth. And if they're not adding a lot of resources, we're not adding a lot of revenue for that, and then you have technology substitution at the same time. So, you know, I think that will continue to be the one portfolio for us that's mature but hard to grow. And we look at what everyone's doing around the world, and there are not many who have figured out that formula who are an incumbent in that space.
Right. Okay, I'll be moving over to wireless next, but I was going to open it up to see if there were any questions from the audience at this point in time. All right, so let's just jump over to wireless. So the wireless market in Canada has clearly been probably healthier than many would have expected. You know, subscriber trends are performing pretty well. What would you highlight as some of the key drivers of subscriber trends in recent quarters? And maybe as you go along those kind of drivers, you know, what do you think is the sustainability of those types of drivers?
Yeah, it's been a very strong year for wireless in Canada. You know, there's a couple of things we're seeing. There is no doubt if you build high-speed wireless networks, the customers, they come and they really use it. I mean, our overall base usage year over year was up 24 to 26% on an entire base of customers because we have this LTE advanced service. So if you're in markets in Canada today on your wireless device, you are getting 100 meg services on your wireless device in Toronto. Okay, so the reports came out last week, not from us. It would say we're roughly a little over double the speed of our largest competitor in wireless, or close to double. That was what the report, not us. And also, you know, maybe in some cases three times faster than some of the other markets down here. So what we're seeing is that speed's driving usage, and it's because of the video. There's no buffering at all. I mean, it's incredible when you get to that type of speed, right, on a wireless device. And what we've done is we've done four spectrum bands together through spectrum aggregation, and that's where we're getting the speed. And then we've done fiber to over 95% of our cell sites, so that we have that full speed capability built in. As a result, we've seen increase in ARPU. and that's really being usage, not so much pricing. You know, with that usage growth of 26%, we saw a 4% increase in average revenue per customer. So that's really what's happened in some strong economy. In terms of subscriber growth, you know, we put it down to three or four things. The country will have net about 340,000 immigrants over the 12-month period. Well, that brings a lot of customers in a country of 35 million, if you do the math and divide that by our number of carriers. We have this phenomenon that's maybe different than here, but most young folks, if they get out of university, join a company, they add a second phone. They don't have their personal phone as the same as their business phone. And so we have this second phone phenomena that continues to grow in the country, and most business people are carrying two devices. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a little different here, and I'll leave that to folks here who will know, but that's definitely been one of the differences. Stronger economy overall has also, I think, contributed to some of the growth. So it feels it's been very positive.
So touching on some of the growth drivers, you mentioned growing data has been a contributor. And obviously here in the U.S., carriers have moved to unlimited. Given the healthy spectrum positions and the network kind of quality, it seems like you guys would have the capabilities to kind of offer something like that very easily. What sort of interest is there, you know, to potentially, or what do you think the prospects of unlimited data are in Canada broadly?
Well, I think, you know, it's a competitive marketplace. I would say this. What we continue to do is make the buckets that are available to customers larger as we've seen the data growth. I mean, obviously, you know, if the average growth in usage has been 26%, but the average revenue growth has been 4% on ARPU, then clearly we're not dollar for dollar catching it. Otherwise, you'd see a slowdown in people's willingness to use the service. But, you know, the strategy of us offering unlimited wireless data isn't in our current strategies.
Fair enough. Another really actually strong element for the group, especially in the most recent quarter, was just a level of record churn across the group.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty curious to better understand what you think was the key driver of this sudden kind of point of record levels of churn across the group. And by the way, we saw that in the U.S. also. So what are your thoughts there in terms of what customers are doing and why they're sticking around?
Well, you know, I think part of it, of course, is upgrade cycles of handsets. And, you know, we'll remain to be seen now with new handsets launched yesterday, I know, and we'll see what happens there. But if you look at the smartphones that people have today, you know, that demand to have to swap it every 24 months when we have two-year contracts, I think we'd argue it's not everyone at every end of 2 years. And so that obviously, you know, doesn't mean as much of an, you know, as fast as an upgrade as we've seen, you know, in the past, for sure, some part of it.
Okay, and so just maybe the outlook into the back half of the year, clearly things are seasonal. You do have a new iPhone. Churn was pretty low. How are you broadly looking at the competitive environment into the back half of the year, given all those items?
Well, of course, back to school is one of our most competitive periods, and Christmas season is one of the most competitive. We're just finishing back to school. As usual, it's been one of our most competitive periods. You know, I can't comment on results of the quarter, but certainly financial reporting out of Canada, the reporting we did in the quarter, and the structural issues I'm talking about, they seem to be being maintained. We'll see how they do, you know, as we go forward. We were particularly proud yesterday with the launch of the Apple product in terms of the Apple Watch. You know, on the slide, it showed that we were the one in Canada from a technology perspective that the new watch would work on at this point. We think that's great differentiation for us in the market. Doesn't mean our competitors won't change their technology or make the changes needed to do that, but that's some nice differentiation early on with that. It'll give us that new product has to pair with a very specific smartphone. Right now, we're the one with the technology to allow that, so I think that's going to be some positive differentiation for us. And if we're fortunate enough to keep that through the holiday season, that might just help us in the marketplace to have a little differentiation. We'll have to see.
One of the elements that potentially may impact competition longer term is kind of what happens with Shaw. Obviously, you know, it's acquisition to Wind since kind of renamed that Business Freedom, but, you know, it's been making steps along the way, launching LTE, slowly but surely building the LTE-capable handset. They've added some spectrum. What are you seeing from the market, from Shaw in the market today? And then going forward, maybe if you can talk through, you know, your outlooks for that particular competitor and what sort of hurdles do you think they have to overcome to kind of be more involved?
Yeah, I mean, they've rebranded. I think it's going to be different for them. I mean, I almost don't want to comment on a competitor. It's almost out of respect for them. But I think their Western Canada approach, where they have the ability to do some bundling, I would think would be quite different than what their approach will be in Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
I think their investment thesis may be a little more focused in the West than in Ontario. And if that happens, there's some benefits to us, obviously, given our strength in some of our home markets. Having said it, it's a formidable competitor. They're going to only move forward from where they've been. They have some strategies they've announced. So I think the market, I think particularly maybe in the Western Canada, will get more intense next year as they start to, you know, think, understand what it is they purchased and how they're going to execute in the marketplace. And then we'll see in Ontario, if they put the investment in, that will be more competitive as well. But my own thinking is they may just be a little more West-focused in Ontario, but we'll just have to wait and see. They'd be the ones who know that answer, not me, but that would be my instincts.
Fair enough. And maybe we could just touch on the wireless network for a bit. You know, as you alluded to, it's a pretty strong network position here in Canada. Maybe you can update us on some of the kind of network projects you're kind of involved in, within your wireless business, some of the key projects I guess you're focused on.
Well, I mean, one was making sure we had the iPhone watch working, so we got that one done. And clearly that's a differentiator for us. I mean, we just rolled out this, we talked about this LTE Advanced and the four carrier aggregation with 256 QAM technology, and that gives us speeds of up to, in theory, up to 750
mm-hmm.
speeds. Now, people aren't going to see that, but we've done that now in 47 of our eight provinces have it, 47 of the cities in the eight provinces have it, and we'll continue to roll that out. And that, you know, that takes us a long way down the path in terms of the amount of speed from a wireless, because when you get into that type of speed on one device, remember, in the home, you're sharing. Mm-hmm. This is like a standalone, your own subscription. I think that puts us in a great position against our peers in the marketplace. And we'll put pressure on both new entrants and our competitors to have to stay in that space, and ultimately should mean more revenue growth for the industry, which, you know, for folks in this room, that's what you're looking for, mm-hmm. is growth for us from either ARPU or from subscriptions.
One last thing on the network. So 5G has kind of been a big topic of discussion here in the U.S.
Yes.
We're seeing some pretty aggressive builds. You know, AT&T and Verizon are pursuing a fixed wireless strategy first.
Yeah.
You guys are going through some trials in 5G, and clearly it leverages your fiber footprint. I mean, maybe you could just talk through kind of what you're seeing in some of those trials and maybe a realistic timeline that you're seeing in Canada for 5G.
Yeah, and I think you have to, you know, it's really, I mentioned interesting this morning listening to Vodafone talk as well. It's very important you've got to distinguish between 5G, between fixed and mobile.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, as I understand it, some of the major carriers are planning to roll out 5G from a fixed perspective.
Yep.
And to have what is talked about as a 1 gig wireless fixed mobile service. I get it. In Canada, we are doing fiber to every one of those premises, and so you will, in all likelihood, not see a fixed 5G service in the urban markets. That would be certainly not from us. And I'll be surprised, given what TELUS is doing and what our cable peers are doing, why they would do that, because it doesn't add anything they don't already have.
Mm-hmm.
5G mobile, for sure, Canada will move to, and that will be a function of the roadmap for true 5G mobile opportunities. And with the four